Hello and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and we are going to continue our study of the book of Genesis today, looking at Genesis chapter 31. So where we left off in chapter 30, of course, we talked about the sin-sick home of Jacob, right? A house that was not given over to God. We saw the major practices of sexual immorality that were happening. We saw him use deceit to try to well, not to try, but to amass wealth to himself while he was working under Laban. And of course, we know that in both of these instances, God interceded and allowed what was happening to happen and to get Jacob and his family back where they were supposed to be. And so today we're going to be looking further at the discussion that we had last time in chapter 30 about the long-term consequences of sin. And that's really going to come to a head today in chapter 31 because Jacob is and Laban are about to have a falling out. He is going to leave in secrecy and try to go back to the promised land. God tells him, look, you need to go. God doesn't say you need to leave secretly, just says you need to get up and go. And Jacob instead tries to use his own wits and wiles again. And he leaves in secret without saying anything to Laban. And Laban, of course, runs him down. And there's all kinds of just lying and deceit, manipulation that go on here. But the bigger point of today's lesson is that God will preserve his people. We, as God's people, we get so much mercy on a daily basis that we do not deserve, that it's very mind-blowing to think about. We don't have to just talk about the general concept of the fact that we're saved and that mercy, but the day-to-day mercies that God gives us of watching over us, protecting us, even when we do something dumb, God intercedes on our behalf many times, or sometimes he doesn't. But there's many times that you and I do something we ought not to do that God stops from becoming more of a situation than what it could have been. And we see that preservation of Jacob today despite Jacob's lack of faith in God. And it would do us well to take into practice having the faith that it requires to be a good servant of God. So here we go, chapter 31. It says, "And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory." The input of chapter 31 here, after chapter 30, has never really made sense to me. Something you're going to learn as you're studying the Bible is that just because there's a chapter number or a verse number doesn't necessarily mean that the context of the narrative has stopped. Here, chapter 31 really needs to continue to be part of chapter 30 because in that story doesn't give you any context. It says, "And he heard the words of Laban's son say," meaning that this is after Jacob starts to accrue all this wealth, using this agricultural cleverness. That he thinks that he has. Some argue that this dream that's coming up later showed that God was going to bless it, but we already talked about the fact that God was going to bless it, regardless of what Jacob's motivation was. And we're going to get into that conversation a little bit more. But so he's used this agricultural cleverness. He's tried to use his own wits and wiles and what he knows about goats to achieve this wealth that he has gained. Okay. And he's gaining it at Laban's expense. A lot of people go, no, it's because he was gaining the same amount of wealth as Laban. No, it told you at the end of chapter 30 that Laban's herds were getting feebler and more sickly, and his were getting stronger and bigger and better. He's obtaining all of this wealth at Laban's expense. And so when we're getting into chapter 31, we're coming off of that he starts to gain all this, that his stuff's better, and he starts to be getting richer and richer. It says, "And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory." Now, there's some truth to what these sons say, and then there's some that's not. Obviously, he didn't steal anything from Laban, okay? He outsmarted Laban, but he didn't steal from Laban. He worked what he worked, and he kept his agreement. He only took what they agreed to take, but he did indeed get a lot of his glory from what he had gained from working for Laban. And here, you know, these sons are envious, obviously. They're wicked, evil men, just like their father is. And what their problem is that Laban had been outsmarted, okay? Jacob had spent a good long time with all of those goats and those sheep. And not that this makes his, makes what he did any better, where he starts this selective breeding and things of that nature. God would have blessed him without him being deceitful, and without him trying to outwit Laban. But at the end of the day, their problem is that they had gotten outdone at their own game. And so here are Laban's sons. They're talking quite a bit of nonsense about Jacob. It says, "And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before." You know, this is kind of a funny verse because they act like Laban and Jacob were buddies. Laban and Jacob were never buddies. The idea of this, his countenance wasn't toward him anymore, means that he's no longer trying to put on a front about his feelings towards Jacob. He's openly hostile to Jacob is what it is. He does not like Jacob. He's not a fan of Jacob. And that, again, goes back to this very warped, sick relationship that Jacob and Laban have had from the beginning, trying to trick and deceive the other. "And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto thy land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee." God comes to Jacob and goes, "Jacob, it is time for you to get your life together. You need to go home where you belong. And if you will go there, I'll take care of the rest, but you need to get up and go." And so here you have all of those things, all those sins that we talked about in chapter 30. They're like, "Well, wait a minute. You're saying that, you know, they're living ungodly lives, that they're living in a fashion that's not pleasing to God." But then it says God intercedes for Leah and for Rachel. And then you're saying that God still interceded for Jacob and blessed this, you know, agricultural development that he was trying to fool Laban on. Yes, the reason for God doing those things was to remove Jacob from where he was. There are so many times in God's people's lives where they think they're being blessed because they're doing the right thing, but in all reality, God is preparing them and interceding for them and trying to get them back on the horse. And we just miss it. We just miss it completely. We go, "Oh, everything's good. God's doing good things. That must be because we're, you know, doing X, Y, Z right." Friends, there's many times God intercedes and things are going good because God is preparing you to get you closer or to get you back to serving Him. This is all about preparing Jacob for that verse. It's time to go home. If you'll go home, I'll be with you and protect you. And so, in light of Jacob's current situation, Laban's sons are mad at him. Laban's mad at him. God says, "You go home. I'll cover your hind end." He decides it's time to call a family meeting. "And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before. But the God of my father hath been with me. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ring straight shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ring straight. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at that time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ring-straight, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ring-straight, speckled, and grizzled. for I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. So Jacob calls his wives out into the field, and he says, look, you know your father's been horrible to me. You know your father's hostile towards me. You know that I've, for the most part, done right by your father. He served Laban for 20 years, but we also know that he kind of tried to get a little deceitful here at the end of chapter 30. He says, your father, though, he's deceived me too. And this is kind of where we start getting that the pot calling the kettle black conversation. You know, he's, oh, I've started to deceive him, and now I'm getting wealth back, and that's justification for the fact that he deceived me and tried to change my wages 10 times. But every time he changed them, what, God suffered him not to hurt me, meaning that Laban realized that most of the animals being born fell to Jacob. And so he would change, okay, well, not spotted. You can't have those ones, but you're going to have these ones. And every time that he changed it, the color of the goats changed. Now, that wasn't because of all the cleverness that Jacob thought he had, and Jacob is finally starting to realize that at this point. That wasn't because of Jacob and his wits and wiles. That was because God was getting Jacob, interceding for Jacob, placing Jacob in a position where he could get out of the mess that was his life. He was not in any way, shape, or form serving God the way a man ought to be serving God. And so Jacob finally starts to realize this now that God has said it's time to go home. And so he tells his wives these things, doesn't he? He says, and it came to pass that while I was, he talks about a dream that he had while the animals were conceiving. And that God told him, see these three, these are the ones that you need to pick. Okay? And for I've seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. Meaning that now Jacob realizes, not just because of a dream that he had, but because of how God has blatantly interceded for him as Laban has changed his wages, that it was God that did all of this for him. Okay? Now, this is a good moment for Jacob. Jacob is having this realization that, okay, God, I wasn't doing anything good or right. This has nothing to do with me. This has to do with God interceding for me. And then look at what God says. He says, I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. God says, I am still the same God that amazed you in a dream at Bethel, that showed you my relationship to the world in Bethel and what was going to come to pass. I'm still that great God, Jacob. I'm the one who's helped with the cattle situation. I have interceded in the situation with your wives. I am the one who is telling you it's time for you to go home. You have to start finally trusting in me. Because remember, last time that Jacob and God had a serious conversation, Jacob essentially said, look, God, if you'll bless me in all the ways I want to be blessed, then we'll talk about this whole service to you thing. Okay? And even here, even as Jacob is starting to realize these things, even though he's starting to go, huh, I guess it wasn't my stick trick that made the cattle thing work, it was God. Even though he's starting to realize that God is going to take care of him and he's got enough faith to have the conversation with his wives of it's time to go home, you're going to see that Jacob still has a very, very long way to go with that faith. It says, and Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted on him, of him, strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. For the first time ever, these two women agree on something. They say, our father didn't like us. In fact, our father, you know, sold us. Don't you like how they say that? For he has sold us. Meaning that he reason that Jacob's married to them is because he sold them to Jacob for 7 years of work. And he has spent all their inheritance. They say, look, nah, we don't really care all that much for Laban. Laban's not done much for us. Whatever you want to do, we'll do. I think it's absolutely hilarious that in this moment, these two women that have fought all these years and had all this competition and all this evil, you are literally brought together by their equal dislike for their father. And so Jacob tells his two wives, this is the plan. The wives say, okay, we're on board. Now, all Jacob has to do is leave, right? And I know what you're thinking. Well, why are you saying now all Jacob has to do is leave? I mean, he does leave. You already said that he's going to leave. He does. But there's a proper way to leave. Even when you and I are switching employers, we give this thing called a 2 weeks notice, right? And for pastors, for me particularly, with secular jobs, I've only ever given a 2 week notice. With pastoring, if I ever were to leave a church, I would give a 4 weeks or 5, 6 week notice because it's very difficult to get a pastor, and that time frame. And it's hard to get pastors in general anymore in this day and time. There's supposed to be some respect, supposed to be some desire to show the love of God, and this is his father-in-law that he is leaving. He should have gone and spoken with Laban, but instead we're going to see that he does what? It says, then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, which he had gotten of his which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. He gets up the next morning, throws everything together, packs all the bags, throws his kids and his wives on camels, and he hot scoots it out of there without anybody knowing he's leaving as quickly as he can. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. In between the time that they have the conversation and they get up and leave, Rachel had snuck over to her daddy's house, stolen his idols, and now they were leaving with them. And there's a lot of people that question what her motivation was for stealing them. I think her overall motivation is that she didn't like Laban and that she knew Laban cared about his idols. Okay? There may have been that she believed in some of the idolatrous worship. There may have been that she, partook in the divination process. There could be a million reasons why, sub reasons why she did this. But I definitely think the main reason was her hatred for her father. And so she steals these, doesn't tell Jacob, and Jacob and them have already left town. Okay? It says, and Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, and that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had. He rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount Gilead. They get up, they leave in secrecy, they cross the river, and they are hot footmen. Okay, they make a 300-mile journey in about a 10-day span. Okay, they are moving to get out of there as quickly as possible. It says, and it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. Obviously, Laban and Jacob had some major distance between them and their house because it took 3 days for Laban to finally receive word or to notice that Jacob and his family are missing. And he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey. And they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. So Laban finds out, realizes his, idols are stolen too, realizes Jacob's gone. He gathers up the boys and he chases them down after 7 days of riding. So 10 days of them traveling, 7 days of him riding. He catches up to Jacob and overtakes him. Now, I already said that Jacob did not leave correctly, right? He did not have enough faith in God to go to Laban, do the right thing, and say, "Hey, we're leaving town. Been nice knowing you, but we're going." Okay? He didn't have enough faith that God said that he would take care of him to not try to use his own wits and wiles again to get out of a bad situation. And so, because of him using his wit and his wiles, what would have happened when Laban caught up with them is he would have killed Jacob, and justifiably so, because of the laws and the culture of that particular time. But God intercedes again. Friends, God interceded for Jacob with the cattle to get him out of the situation. God intercedes again when Jacob has no faith and tries to figure it out all on his own again. He comes to Laban and says, "All right, listen here, big guy. If I was you, I'd be careful what you do tomorrow when you catch up with them." Essentially, God was saying, read between the lines. You try to do something to him, and I'm going to wipe you smooth out. It says, then Laban overtook Jacob, and now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What hast thou done, that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly, and steal away from me, and didst not tell me, that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp?" He goes up to Jacob and he kind of tries to pull the old school Laban card, right? Of being nice and shocked, just absolutely surprised by this behavior. Says, "How could you do this? I mean, you stole away like you were robbing me of something. I couldn't even throw a big going away party for you without quickly and secretly you stuck off. And has not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters." Now it starts to change the tone. "Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. You tried to get run out of here with my grandchildren and my children. And that was a very dumb idea that you had, Jacob. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt." Here's Laban's true intent, right? When Laban caught up with them, Laban had fully intended to kill Jacob and take them away. But, it says, "But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods?" Laban says, "But look here, big guy. You did a dumb thing sneaking out of here. You thought you'd get away from me. And it's completely within my power. I can do it right here, right now. I kill you, take your life right here. But lucky for you, your God had a conversation with me. And I know that you're running back to your daddy's house. You just missed your daddy. You know, things weren't good enough for you up here. But if that's true, that you missed your daddy and things weren't good enough up here, why have you stolen my idols?" Laban tries to pull a trick with God too. Laban goes, "Okay, God, all right, I won't kill him. I won't kill him for that reason, but he stole from me, which means that there is a punishment that was to be entailed for that." And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid." Jacob says, "Look, I left. I'll be honest with you, I was scared to death. That's why I left." Oops, lost my place there for a minute. "Because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me." Jacob says, "All right, look, I left it secretly because I was scared of you." That would be the have no faith in God part, which God just smacked him right across the face because Laban already said God did what? Protected his hind end again, okay? "But I figured that I was afraid because I figured you'd take your daughters, you'd send me away with nothing." That is what the idea is. It says, "With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. Jacob said, however, nobody here stole your gods. And if you do find them here, whoever you find having possessed them, you can take their life right here, right now, and punish them, and then take whatever is yours. But I promise you, I have not stolen your idols. Jacob has no idea that he basically just put the death sentence on his wife's head if Laban finds these idols. It says, and Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent, and entered into Rachel's tent. So Laban goes through all the tents, throwing stuff around, can't find them. And then he goes into Rachel's tent. God intervened for Jacob in making the cattle thing work. God intervened for Jacob when he didn't have enough faith in God to not try to leave Laban deceitfully, and has now protected his life. And now God is going to intervene for Rachel, who is also going to try to rely on her own wits and wiles and get her out of a situation that otherwise could have ended ugly. It says, now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images. So here, Laban comes in, and Rachel is trying to think quickly about what to do, and she sits on top of the box that has the images in it, and says, I am so sorry, but I cannot stand up because it's that special, special time for me as a woman, which meant that Laban could not even be in her presence. It was unclean, basically. And so she sits down, and Laban, of course, does not ask her to stand up. Rachel uses her own wits and wiles, but again, guess who interceded? God did. Because Laban very well could have said, I do not care, get out of my way. Let me search that box. And Jacob was wroth. So here he's gone about, he's doing all of his searching, he's not coming up with anything, he's getting to the end of being able to search stuff, and Jacob then gets extremely angry about this circumstance, and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flocks have I not eaten. That which was torn of beast I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hast sent me away now empty. God hath seen mine affliction, and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight. Jacob just unloads on Laban. But there's some things to glean from here. First of all, he talks about all the work that he did for Laban. That, you know, there were no miscarriages, that he didn't eat any of Laban's animals. You know, he didn't take anything of his, basically, for personal gain. Typically in that day and time, if a shepherd recovered the body parts of an animal that had been torn up by the wolves, it proved his bravery in attempting to stop that attack, and he could bring it to the master, and it was not counted against him. But instead, Jacob, any that were stolen, any that were attacked, he replaced out of his own flock. He's like, I worked for you for a whole lot longer for your daughters than I should have. I worked for you for a whole lot longer for your cattle than I should have. I have done everything for you, but look at that last thing he says. Sent the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me. Does he say the God of my God? Does he identify himself at all with God? No. Despite everything God is doing, Jacob still doesn't have the faith or the desire to fully give his life over to God. He wants God to intercede when things get ugly. He wants God to bless him materialistically. He wants God to help him out of tight spots. But he's not fully dedicated to giving his life over to God. And that this is an attitude that is so prevalent in today's world. Friends, when things get ugly, God's churches just fill up. All of a sudden, all these people are here and there. Oh my goodness, you know, we're praying, we ask God to take care of it, and as soon as things start getting a little bit better, everybody disappears again. There are many, many Jacobs sitting on pews across the world today that they want God for what they can get, but they don't want to give their lives to God. Jacob here, he says, God intervened for me, and I recognize God intervened for me, but I'm not ready to give the full shot put over to God. I'm okay with, you know, the fact that he was the God of my granddaddy and my daddy, but I'm not quite there yet. But I do appreciate his effort. that's essentially what Jacob's saying. He does not have the full faith. He's not fully given his life over to God. And we know that he's not, because it's not until God literally gets a hold of him that Jacob's life changes in that respect. Here, he can take it or leave it. He just wants God to help him out. Okay? And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters or unto their children which they have borne? Laban says, look here, big fella. This is all mine. Laban is trying to get in his last shots because he's still scared of God. He doesn't atone to, just like Jacob. He's not giving his life over to God. But he also knows that God's not somebody to play with either. And so he's getting in his last arrogant shots here. These are all mine. My kids, my daughters, my grandchildren, my stuff. Everything that you are is because of me. When in all reality, everything that Jacob has is because of God. It says, now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou. Let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jagar Sahadutha. But Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed. And Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict any of my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us, and Jacob swear by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount, and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread, and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up, and kissed his sons and his daughters, and blessed them, and Laban departed, and returned unto his place. Laban says, look here, we're going to have to make a little bit of an agreement between us. I kind of laugh at this part of this chapter when I get in here, because I told my wife, I said, you always need space from the in-laws, okay? Now, I love my in-laws, and I'm not just talking about mine in particular. Hers, she needs space away from my parents too, all right? There has to be space away from in-laws, though, to a degree. Now, obviously not with love. To the degree Laban and Jacob do. Laban and Jacob got a lot more extreme problems in that relationship. But there has to be a bit of that divine, because a man and a woman cannot become one if either sets of parents are right there the entire time. And so there's a principal takeaway from here that for you to form a good functioning family and a good functioning marriage, there needs to be space between you and the parents of both parties. However, here Laban is saying, we need to have this set up so that I don't come kill you, and I have to worry about you coming and killing me. And we're going to let God be the one who deals with both of us while we can't watch each other. That's what the idea of Mizpah is let God judge you for whatever you do while I can't know what you're doing. And so they set up this pillar, and basically they bury the hatchet. Okay, they smooth things over where nobody's trying to kill anybody, but we never hear of Laban again, and Laban never sees his family again. This is the end of our run with Laban. And so that's chapter 31. However, let's back up and let's talk about the application side of this. Just because things are going good or things work out in your life does not always mean that that's because your life is where it's supposed to be. God interceded for Jacob with the cattle thing that he pulled. God interceded for Jacob when he still didn't have enough faith to trust God and leave the right way and tried to sneak away in the night. That could have gone very, very differently. God interceded when Rachel stole and then tried to use her wits and wiles to hide the fact that she had stolen her father's idols. Friends, all through this story, God saved the bacon of his children over and over and over again, despite the life that they were living, because God was trying to bring them back to him, back into a place where that he could redo the lives they were living. Do not always think that because God is working things out or interceding things for you that that has anything to do with what you're doing. It always has to do with how great and mighty God is and how much he loves his children despite the foolish things that we can do from time to time. So as you're going about your week, first of all, you need to work on this week giving yourself fully to Jacob. Jacob here swears by the faith of his father. Here's God, and he's interceding, doing all these things that Jacob can plainly see. But Jacob's still not giving his whole life over. Friends, we have got so many people across this nation, across this world, that are Jacob Christians. They like God when God's doing things for them, and then when God's not really helping them out all that much, they don't care. That's not a relationship, and that's not a true servant's heart for God, and we need more actual servants for God. Give your whole life over this week. Secondly, always analyze and assess your life and be honest. If there is a sin problem that's in it, don't think just because things are hunky-dory that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing 100% of the time. You need to be addressing and looking at your life, because it just might be that God's interceding to put you in a position where you have to draw closer to him again, as Jacob is about to find out. And finally, always remember that sin has lasting consequences. What goes on in Jacob's household and between Jacob and Laban, they never see Laban again. That's a family that's divided and torn. The sins that they see of their mother stealing and of their father's sexual immorality with multiple women here in this camp, that leaves a lasting impression on his sons and what his sons are going to be and do. Do not think sin is a little thing, because sin is always a big thing. So, I hope all of you, though, have an excellent week. I hope you've enjoyed it being on here. If there were any new listeners, glad to have you guys with us as well. Those who are listening to the recording later, it's good to have you guys listening also. I hope that everybody is gleaning something from this. We're getting very, very close to the end of Genesis. We're about 60% of the way there. My brain is helping me out any. So make sure, though, to be prepared as we're getting into the reconciliation with Esau. Jacob's about to have to answer for another one of his sins and bad decisions with relationships in chapter 32. But that has been Genesis chapter 31. And as always, you guys get out of here and go study.